Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This is the Goalkeepers Union Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the Rogering voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. How are you? How was your weekend?
My weekend was, yes, very good, very cold, very wet, but always, Richard, when it comes to goalkeeping, very, very enjoyable.
Indeed, indeed. And mine, I was Rogering.
What a start. So it's been a month, nearly a month, actually a month exactly, I think, since we were last on the pod, you and I. And you've been Rogering. So talk to me.
I have. I mean, I feel like we should clear things up.
We should. I mean, you've been Rogersing, really. That's what you've been doing.
I have indeed. Yes. So last week in Dubai, it seems like the last of the three international breaks this side of the year. So you always get the ones every year, September, October, November. Not a great deal happens in Dubai, September, October, if I'm honest. However, November always seems to be the one where a flood of footballers, a flood of managers come out to Dubai. I think partly because it always seems to align with the golf tournament, which goes on, the race to Dubai, which always goes on this time of the year. And it was no different this year. And I actually had the pleasure, caught up with a few of the lads that we work with, but also had the pleasure of catching up with an old manager of mine, Mr. Brendan Rodgers.
Lovely stuff. How was that? Recently out of work, of course. How was that?
It was really good. Yeah, it was quite nice, actually, because I had, in 2 days on the spin, I had Brendan Rodgers one day, Sean Dyche the next. And I think I've told that story way too many times about Dyche getting sent off on my debut many, many years ago. So it was lovely to see him and doing a fantastic job again in the Premier League for Nottingham Forest at the moment. But Brendan was really interesting because haven't seen him for quite some time, to be honest. And we have the odd bit of back and forth, more on a work level over the last few years. But just so happened, I was in his hotel with one of the lads that we work with, and he just mentioned, oh, I see Brendan Rodgers at the hotel. So I dropped him a text, thought, you know what, it'd be great to see him if he is around, but I'm sure he's busy with family, etc. But he came straight back to me, said, yeah, look, around tomorrow for a coffee if you fancy it, and ended up meeting him, having lunch, going over lots of old stories. Yeah, it was really, really good. And do you know what? The one for me with Brendan, and I'm going to bring this back to goalkeeping, is obviously had lots of managers over the time, many, many managers, in fact, over the time of playing, got a few managers to sack, I'm sure. But with Brendan in particular, it was an interesting one in that I never actually played a game for him during the time that he was at Watford, which was the best part of a year. But I still speak about him and have done for, you know, the last 10 years or so as arguably the best or certainly top three managers I ever worked with, more for the fact that he was always really tuned in when it came to man management. And I think, again, going back to goalkeeping and what's important to goalkeepers, the amount of conversations you and I have with clients, with lads about conversations they've had with managers or lack of communication from managers and the difficulty they could cause, whereas that's something that Brendan really specialises in.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's good to hear that, right? Because look, to have achieved what he's achieved, you have to have something about you. But I think that, not that he's been mocked for his personality, but there's always been, people have always talked about it on a certain way. I mean, there's been the comparisons to Brent in some of the comments that he's made over the years, right? So I guess that just proves it doesn't always have to be so outwardly facing. What you do behind closed doors isn't always the way that you are in press conferences or the way that you speak to the media. And ultimately, he has been a very successful manager. So what you're saying really, yeah, I guess supports that.
It was more just the fact that, you know, people talk about managers, and naturally when we watch Sky Sports News, so much is spoke about the tactical side and, you know, how they come across in the media, how they work with their team. But I think the psychological side, the understanding of the human, which Brendan really, that was a big thing for me when he came in, and he was so different to any manager I'd had before, where actually the man management side of things was top. You know, the first week that I was there, again, I was very much a number two at the time, and I remember him pulling me in and essentially telling me he saw me as a number two, very straight with me. Said, look, I don't see you as a number one for us. I see you as a number two. I always remember a line he said, and he'd been at Chelsea before. He said to me, like, I see you as a Carlo Cudicini type. I know that I can trust you if you step in, but just want to be straight from the start. That's how I see you, but have full faith in you, et cetera, et cetera. But then what he then did after that, every week, every couple of weeks, you know, you'd be training and he'd make a point of coming over to you and just having a couple of minutes with you and just telling you where you stand, what you're doing well, what you're not doing so well. And it was something that I never really had after that either, you know, and it's as simple as it sounds. And for how much we talk about managers, the great managers, what they're great at and how they're great, it's probably the bit that is the simplest. And I think a lot of goalkeepers would argue is the most important, just to know exactly where you stand and have that feeling of certainty as to what your role is within the team.
It's very clever that, isn't it? I mean, on one hand, quite ridiculous that Richard Lee could be compared to Carlo Cudicini, a number two at Watford, compared to, you know, a number one slash two at Chelsea at Tottenham. But at the same time, I imagine you've walked out of that room feeling quite good about yourself because essentially you've been compared to Carlo Cudicini.
So I see what you're saying, that he was actually just manipulating me. That's what you're essentially saying. There was no truth in what he said whatsoever. Okay, now I'm really starting to doubt myself. I mean, you've started this on a negative footing now. We haven't done a podcast for a while. I was hoping this would be a really good one, high energy. And essentially, you've negged me to start.
And just one to finish as well. I mean, both great men, of course, both you and Brendan. But that's two people sat at a table looking across at each other thinking, he's had a lot of work done.
Wow. I mean, you had a chance to pull things back there, but no, you've just gone further. You just dug a bigger hole. I mean, where do we go from here?
On with the show.
Let's do it.
Okay, starting in the Premier League, Richard, with two interference-based goals, we are going to talk about, actually three, really, because we are going to refer to one that happened a couple of weeks ago before the international break. Liverpool 0, Nottingham Forest 3, Arsenal 4, Tottenham 1. So in the Liverpool game, the opener for Forest from Murillo, Dan Ndoye blocking the vision of Alisson. The goal was given. There was a similar scenario. This is the third one that we're going to talk about between Liverpool and Man City a couple of weeks ago. Andrew Robertson interfering on that occasion with Gianluigi Donnarumma. That goal was not given. And then yesterday in the North London derby, Eberiche Eze with multiple players blocking the vision of Guglielmo Vicario. That goal was given.
Yeah. I mean, look, do you know what? I'm going to sit on the fence to an extent here, but not in the way that you would think, in that essentially I know it kind of comes back to that, which one should be given, which one shouldn't. You know, all three should be the same, one way or another. That's probably it for me, in that, you know, people will talk about consistency with this, and it is, as much as VAR is being used, of course, it is just a subjective view at that point. And I think with all three of these, you know, arguably the worst of the three was Vicario, had three men in front of him, couldn't see it, that was given, and yet, as you mentioned, the one with Donnarumma in particular wasn't given. So that can't be right. But I just don't know if it's something that can be black and white, because then again, it comes back to that conversation as to what is impeding, what isn't, you know, and at what point are they impeding. And but those two examples in particular, I think that if Vicario is the goal is being given, then there's no way that the goal against Donnarumma is given as a foul. The one with Donnarumma in particular, does he save it, does he not? The chance, he probably doesn't anyway because of what happened. Whereas the Vicario one, there is a much better chance of saving it if he can get sight of the ball. So there'd be the two that I would highlight and just say that it can't be that one's gone one way, one's gone the other way. And you look at both of those in isolation, and certainly the Vicario situation is a lot more difficult for the goalkeeper than the Donnarumma one.
So if you're in goal there, are you fuming that the goal has been given?
Yeah, I am, because, you know, essentially you've got three men that are in an offside position, and that split second that he isn't able to see it, even more so with that one that he actually gets a decent hand to it. You know, he still would have been frustrated anyway that on another day he gets more of a hand, it goes around the post. But you take those three men out of the equation, does he react that tiny bit quicker? Does that make it easier to make the save? Yes, it does. So that one in particular, I think, has to be given as offside. Whereas you could argue the other two, both Alisson and Donnarumma, probably don't save them anyway. And that goes back to the consistency. And as I say, I'm not necessarily giving an answer. All I'm saying is that ideally there needs to be something that is blanket and a bit more black and white. But it is such a tough situation to make black and white, because there will no doubt then be another situation in the next couple of weeks where someone clearly isn't interfering or is outside the line of the post. I mean, maybe it's as simple as that. If they're inside the line of the post and they're offside, then, you know, from wherever the shot's taken, then you could argue they are interfering because they're going to be close enough to the goalkeeper and it will play a part.
Okay, speaking of Donnarumma, Newcastle 2, Man City 1. The winner here scored by Harvey Barnes. Now, Donnarumma was booked for his protests after that goal was given. I don't know about you, but to me, nothing wrong here.
No, and I think Rob Green said it, and I agreed. I think it's really tricky because, again, so tough to get black and white with situations like this. Now, is there a slight nudge? There is. I think by the point he gets nudged, he has already made the step forward into traffic, and then it's difficult to get himself back into the position that he needs to be. Again, it's, you know, any type of nudge is going to influence a goalkeeper when it comes to a cross. With this one, I think it's just the fact that he's taken the step in, and by the time he'd done that, slightly misread the flight of the cross. It's obviously going a bit deeper. He can't then recover. I think Rob Green said it well, that had he have just held his position and then had he had come and got interfered with, then at that point it's a foul. But I think the moment he's gone in and misjudged it, then it's difficult to claim the foul.
Nick Pope in this game as well, twice denying Erling Haaland. The first one I thought was rather un-Pope-like, racing out of his goal. The second one, very Pope-like. That's vintage Nick Pope.
Yeah. Well, I think the one racing out of his goal, and this is where goalkeeping, again, where, you know, moments can go for you and against you. And I think this is a good example where, look, if Erling Haaland had have taken the ball around him, slotted it into the net, then no doubt he's getting stick from the pundits, and it's one that you're discussing as a rash decision in that moment. But then when it works out like it does, do we credit him? You know, because he has made Erling Haaland panic in that moment, and it's very unlike Haaland in terms of the finish. So, you know, the fact that he was caught by surprise and Nick Pope did get just about close enough, it's forced him into doing what he's done, which is then, you know, effectively prevented what would likely have been a goal. But again, another example, I guess, where goalkeeping isn't black and white. Sometimes you can make a decision that on the face of it, you could argue, is it textbook goalkeeping? No. Is it the wrong decision in the moment? Did he slightly misjudge it, Nick Pope? You could argue that yes, he did, because he probably came out thinking he was going to get there first. However, the outcome's the perfect outcome. You know, I think if Haaland takes a touch, 9 times out of 10, he scores. So actually doing what he did, you know, likely prevented the goal. Had he stayed back, good chance it ends up in a goal. So in a weird way, you've got to credit Nick Pope. And at the same time, when you're looking at it black and white and you're looking at it objectively, would you recommend coming out in that situation when Haaland has control of the ball? No, you wouldn't.
Bournemouth 2, West Ham 2, and performance of the weekend arguably coming from Alphonse Areola. So 10 saves in total from the Frenchman, the pick of the bunch from Junior Krupe. So they did ship a 2-goal lead in the end and draw 2-2, but it could have been defeat had it not been for Areola. One of those as well where I guess the 9 other shots, if he does concede them, he's disappointed. At the same time, he was very much in that mood and just made save after save.
Yeah, I thought it was excellent. You know, the amount of saves with his feet as well in particular, I think 3 or 4 that I counted, like top saves with his feet. Big reaction save as well. I enjoyed the save where he's coming across to his left and he's essentially stuck out a right boot to put it around the post, which then we saw the celebrations after, and rightly so, because that's quite a difficult one that effectively you're not going to be able to dive from that situation. You come across, you've narrowed the angle as best you can, you've got yourself in the best possible position, and then it is just a case of using your frame. If he puts it either side in the corner, he's going to score. But you'll hope, and has happened here, that it wasn't quite in the corner, that you've got yourself into that perfect position where you've given yourself the best chance, which he did. And then it's the speed of reactions, the balance, first and foremost, to get yourself and not go completely to your left, in which case it becomes an easy finish. He still maintained that bit of balance, was able to move his body slightly, get his right foot to it, get it round the post, and it's a top save.
The GKU curse struck again as well at the weekend, because we've been praising Georgi Petrovic for effectively going under the radar since he moved to Bournemouth from Chelsea, and the opener in this one scored by Callum Wilson. We're not going to give it a keeper caper, but it's a goalkeeping error.
Yeah, I think it'd be frustrating. It's interesting when you watch it back and there's a certain angle where you can see that effectively he's looked back towards the goal to see where he's going. And even in doing so, you would argue that positionally he got it slightly wrong. Even in getting it slightly wrong positionally, you know, he gets enough on it where you feel like, okay, can he deflect it around the post? But I think there's a few bits here. I think the speed at which this happened, you could see that he's having to make the movement very quickly. And look, you watch it in super slow motion, it doesn't look good. But the speed at which it happened, he's got to get himself back quick. First and foremost, get himself into the best possible position. And then it's going back on himself to then make the save. Now, if he gets it right positionally, I do think this would have been quite a comfortable save. I think the fact he's gone that little bit too far for a start makes it difficult. You can tell he's a little bit disorientated. The actual attempt to make the save itself, it was fine to an extent. And of course, last minute hasn't quite got the the connection on the ball to get it around the post. There's just a few small details here. And in the end, you could see instantly his disappointment in himself. But again, we all face that as goalkeepers quite often when suddenly the ball breaks, suddenly it's in a different position. There's so much going on in your mind that you need to get yourself into that position as best you can, as quickly as you can. And then it's that moment of steadiness, that moment of calm in order to then be ready to make the save. And it didn't quite feel like he had that. It all looked very rushed, got himself into a difficult position and then wasn't able to recover and make the save.
And finally, at the Amex, Brighton 2, Brentford 1. And a tale of two pens here for Bart Verbruggen, Igor Thiago, and the commentator, Jonathan Pearce, because this is one of those ones that we have to discuss because of the hypocrisy, I'm going to say here, with these two penalties, or the change of opinion from one penalty to the other, and that being one penalty that scored and one penalty that saved. So the first was a fantastic penalty, well taken from Thiago. He sent the goalkeeper the wrong way. Brentford 1-0 up. The second, I believe, to equalise, it would have been at the time, maybe to take lead, I can't remember what the score was at the time. A carbon copy of a penalty, pretty much, saved by Verbruggen, but branded as a rotten penalty.
Yeah, it's a rotten penalty if it doesn't go in, apparently. It's as simple as that, you know. But Bart Verbruggen dived the other way for the second penalty and it had gone in, then of course it would have been a fantastic penalty.
Absolutely.
It's ridiculous. Now, the bit, looking at it from the goalkeeper's point of view, because I don't really care about the striker's point of view. Oh, actually, do you know what? I say that. And what I'd say is, you can see, and this is where I give Verbruggen big credit on the second one, is that the taker is very much looking at Verbruggen. And the first one, I think he's just seen that slight sign that he's diving to his right-hand side, and then he slotted it the other way. Now, where I give Verbruggen credit on two fronts in particular, one for the fact that, you know, the obvious thing is, and this is more percentages, and I'm saying this without the stats in front of me, but ordinarily, if someone scores a penalty going one way, they're going to do the same thing for the second penalty. It's well over 50%. I'm very, very confident on that. And that was always what I was taught. If someone scores going one way, there's a second penalty in the game, it's the same person taking it, they're going to effectively, they've got confidence from scoring that first one, there's a very good chance they're going the same way. So the fact that Verbruggen didn't fall into that and actually still went the other way, so that on one hand, give him credit. And the other one is that he held his dive until the last second. Now, that might sound like a silly thing to say, but of course, on penalties, more often, certainly back in my day, it was a case of you go early, you know, especially when players were just looking at the ball and they were picking a target, picking a spot in the goal that they're aiming towards. You knew that you could go very early and it'd make no difference because it didn't really matter what you did. They were very much in control of their situation. So again, he's had to wait until the last second, knowing that the player's looking at him, and he even faints a little bit to go to his left, and then he's so quick to then get back and get down to his right. So it's excellent goalkeeping. You know, I think more often than not, the player scores here because, you know, normally when a goalkeeper hasn't moved at the point of impact, then even the strike, even the rotten penalty that it was, according to the commentator, would still beat the goalkeeper because it's so hard from a standing jump to get across that quickly. So a couple of bits here. Yeah, read the situation well, waited until the last second, and then so explosive to get down to his right-hand side.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
It is the EFL overview. Richard, we are going to go with four goalkeepers from each division, starting in the Championship with James Beadle. Two decent stops in another four-goal romp for Birmingham at home. This time, hapless Norwich, the victims. Really good reactions from Emiliano Marcondes and Shane Duffy in the second half. That's four wins from eight games for him. That's Beadle since coming into the side. Just want to quickly touch on Ethan Horvath for both Tyrese Campbell goals in the Steel Derby victory for Sheffield United. Not one he'd be blamed for, but from a technical standpoint, worth the discussion.
Yeah, we'll start with James Beadle. As you mentioned, he stepped in and, yeah, certainly really hit the ground running for Birmingham and some big victories for them. You kind of feel like they're just starting to gather a bit of momentum now as well. So really intriguing to see where they go. But a couple of top saves here, the tip over the bar. Both, in fact, on the back of us talking quite a lot about positioning, both of these positionally very, very good. The first one, you know, not getting drawn into where the cross came, got himself on the line, maximum reaction time, used the whole 6'7" frame to get the tip over. And similarly with the second one, another corner, gets himself over into a really good position and almost saves it with his chest diving to his right. But top save. And then Horvath, yeah, I think certainly the second goal in particular, I think he'll be a little bit frustrated. You know, we talk a lot about getting your set as best you can and being ready and the speed at which you can get down. I don't think he quite got himself set as quickly as he could. Positionally, I think he was fine, but that speed at set and to be able to then get himself down to his left, he's almost got his weight on his heels that little bit, hasn't quite nailed the set and sort of dived backwards to an extent. And because of that, wasn't really able to get much reach. Whereas I think had he got that set right, had he been able to drive through the ball to his left-hand side, then I'm pretty confident he'd got hands to this. So yeah, a frustrating one for him, surely.
And two goalkeepers at the age of 38 doing their thing in the championship. Asmir Begovic, one-on-one denial of Milan Manhurf, and a save, as the commentator coined it, of acrobatic variety from Bayesian Ho. So Leicester beat Stoke 2-1 in a win that moves them to within 3 points of Stoke in third place. That's two wins from two since Begovic came into the side. And a draw and a win following three defeats on the spin prior to Ben Hamer entering the fold for QPR. He made a late close-range save from Carl Joseph, and that saw QPR bag a first home win in 2 months. Top stuff from both Begovic and Hamer. You'd love to see it.
You do indeed. And I think this very much falls into line with when people talk about goalkeepers getting better with age. And these two are really good examples where they just make the game look quite easy. You know, look, have they quite got what they had a few years ago in terms of certain attributes and certain parts of the game? Maybe, maybe not. But actually, you watch them and the intelligence that they play with. We talk a lot about positioning on this podcast, but, you know, both the saves that Asmir Begovic made in particular, positionally perfect. And actually, the speed of reactions for the save that he tipped over the bar, fantastic. And the agility to get himself up to the right-hand side, very, very good. But again, he just plays with a certain calmness, which, you know, is so important for any goalkeeper and something that you do tend to learn that bit more with age. And Ben Hamer, I mean, you know, came out of the blue to an extent. The fact that he was out of contract until, what, a month, 6 weeks ago, whenever it was, and now finds himself playing championship football has helped turn QPR's fortunes around. Certainly had a great game at Sheffield United, made some massive saves there. And again, a key save at the end of this game. It is great to see, and certainly where, you know, young goalkeepers, we talk to a lot about looking after yourself and the longevity that you can have. You know, the fact that it is an anaerobic sport, it's not an aerobic sport. So because of that, you know, you're not having to run 10, 12 kilometers a game. So it is more a case of keeping yourself fit, keeping yourself robust, keeping yourself sharp, doing your work in the gym, living healthily, sleeping well, etc., etc. And actually, there's no reason you can't go on into your 40s.
Into League One, and four more interesting profiles to just touch on. Firstly, Sam Walker, keeping it clean for Bradford, his fourth clean sheet of the season. He hasn't missed a league game since signing for Bradford in the summer of 2024. Promotion last season, of course. Prior to that, it was 6 years of sporadic football following his departure from Colchester, but now enjoying a renaissance at Bradford, doing really well, Sam Walker. Ross Fitzsimmons is the other one, still just 31. He's had a nomadic career, it's fair to say, up to now. Did spend time in the championship with Crystal Palace and Bolton, but he's now at the highest level where he's actually played an 8-game run ahead of Lee Burge at Northampton. They lost at home to Cardiff, and a man who played a huge part in that was Nathan Trott. Big, big save at the death in this one from Elliot List. 2-1 up at the time. Cardiff went up the other end to secure the win at 3-1. And finally, Killian Cahill. So a second mention for him on the pod this season, and a very similar stop to the last one that we mentioned. Ashley Fletcher's effort instinctively diverted over the bar. He did concede in stoppage time from Fletcher. I felt for him because of the game he had. Really cruel, that one. But another one unexpectedly holding down the number one spot, in this case, ahead of England under 21, Tommy Simkin.
Yeah, huge credit to him for that. And you mentioned that save in particular. Really good save. And the reason that I actually like this even more so was the fact that, again, balls cut across and there can be a temptation. I'll talk about, again, getting into the best possible position as quickly as you can. But sometimes you just don't have chance to do that. And so in this situation, you can see that he's had the intelligence, the speed of thought, actually just to set where he is. You know, he's arguably not in the best possible position he can be in, but he can't get there. He just doesn't have the time, but he just sets. And if it wasn't for that, there's no chance he makes his save. And the speed of reactions to make the save, very, very good. And then you mentioned at the other end as well, Nathan Trott. I know he's getting plenty of people talking about him, and a very interesting goalkeeper given the journey he's been on. Top save in this. And for me, it was very much about his balance in this situation and the speed again to get the foot to it. Very, very good save.
And finally, in League Two, four to finish. Barrows, Kane Hemmings and Isaac Fletcher both kept out by the ever-present Jake Eastwood of Cambridge in a 2-0 win for the away side. Hokey-cokey keepers at Bromley. Sure, it won't be the first time we say that this season, not just at Bromley, but throughout the Football League. Grant Smith back in for Sam Long and keeping it clean against Salford. Killian Mai, Adebola Oluwo and Luke Garbutt all kept at bay in that one. That was his 100th league appearance for the club. A nice bit of Route 1 for Barnet's opener at Gillingham. Kieran Slicker with more than a punt, you'd say, but a directed and arrowed ball up top. Good accuracy stats on those has Slicker. Cross, goal, ended one apiece. And Richard O'Donnell with a first league outing in pretty much bang on a year. So last played for Blackpool on the 23rd of November 2024. He turned out for Grimsby in a lovely emergency loan on the 22nd of November 2025. A couple of important stops in the second half to keep the scores level.
Yeah, well, firstly, we've got to start with Rich O'Donnell. Buzzing for him to get again. Tough game to come into, by the way. Away to Swindon, obviously topping the table. So to get something from that game. And again, feel like we're speaking a lot about experienced goalkeepers on this pod. Obviously talking about Ben Hamer, Razvan Begovic. But again, a really good example. And I guess when it comes to an emergency loan, there's lots of different arguments that surround it. But a lot of the time, if you can bring in a Rich O'Donnell type who's been there, who's played so many different levels, so many games behind him, even though he hasn't played for a period of time, because of that muscle memory that he has, that game memory that he has, he's able just to step into a game of that magnitude for the club and play in the way he did. So a massive well done to him. And also just wanted to mention Jake Eastwood, because another one that you could argue to an extent has gone under the radar somewhat, but has done very, very well at Cambridge. I thought he was excellent at the weekend. Two big saves in particular. Fantastic one to his left, one-on-one, and there was actually then a one-on-one save, which I really enjoyed for the fact that his, Cambridge lost possession and he was massively out of position. And again, you've got a split second to make a decision. Do you run back towards your goal and try and get yourself into a decent spot? But in that moment, he realised actually, even though he was huge out of position, if he just went straight forward, was able to get close enough, he could kind of narrow that angle in a way, very unorthodox, but the speed at which he was able to get out made a brilliant shape, great save. And again, thinking outside the box. Clean Sheet Club. Yep, it's that time in the show. It's been a while since I've done this, so feeling a little bit rusty, but let's see how we go. That's right, it is Clean Sheet Club. We start in the Premier League. Robert Sanchez, hat-trick. Bernd Leno, 124 successive league outings. Matt Sells, account open for 25-26. Dean Henderson, hat-trick, mark two. Into the Championship, Rade Vitek, hype it up inside the venue. Christian Walton, unbeaten. Arthur Okonkwo, hat-trick, mark three. Michael Cooper, back-to-back. Into League One, Alex Bass, all about that. Connor Hazard, off to Italy. Murphy Cooper, tally doubled. Teddy Sharman Lowe, hat-trick mark four. Sam Walker, flavour of the day. Philip Marshall, pole position. Timotei Lototala, hi Totala. And into League Two, Miles Roberts, on it. Jake Eastwood, hat-trick mark five. Grant Smith, centurion. Joe Day, bobbing along. Matthew Hudson, hat-trick mark six.
Like you've never been away, Richard. Very good indeed.
Well, there you go. It's, again, we talk about game memory, muscle memory. It just comes flooding back.
Always bring it back to goalkeeping. Very good. The table is interesting because we are going to regress from League Two to the Championship in terms of where the goalkeepers sit. So we'll start 7 clean sheets in 16 from the Championship, Carl Rushworth. In second spot, 8 clean sheets in League One, Josh Keighley in 16 appearances. And top of the pile as things stand is Matthew Hudson of Oldham, 9 in 17.
Very good. Very good. And I was actually at the first of those, MK away on opening day. Great clean sheet that was. And yeah, 9 in 16. Impressive.
Well, if he wins the clean sheet club, if he's crowned the clean sheet club king, you can say you were there when it all started.
I can. And I didn't see that coming. I thought that it might be a difficult season, always is, when you gain promotion from the National League. But duck to water, Matthew. Duck to water.
Okay, top stuff. That is us for another week. I feel like there's loads to talk about, but all in good time. January is fast approaching, so we shall be busy over the next few months or so. But you will be back probably in about a month's time or so.
Yeah, whenever you have me on again, whenever the rotation comes back around to me. We are doing like a bit of a rotation strategy at the moment, you know, just, you know, sometimes it's a case of goalkeepers doing well, you keep them in the team. But other times it's okay to rotate, you know, give everyone a go.
It is. You're just like, I don't know, you're like my Carlo Cudicini, basically. That's kind of thing on how I'd refer to you.
There you go. Nicely done.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
And this has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks and Keepers.
Oh, wait.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.